It's easy to talk about the easy stuff. Work. Sports. But sometimes, we need to talk about the hard stuff. The difficult questions that linger in our minds, but we're afraid to ask. Is there truly a way to know right from wrong? Do advances in science undermine the authority of the Bible? Does God have anything to say about my depression? Does God hate me because I'm gay? Because I'm transgender? Is it just lights out when we die? Or is there something more? For too long, the church has avoided difficult conversations. Because, well, they're difficult. We're ready to change that. The afterlife, mental health, evolution, sexuality. This is a conversation about what God really has to say about these topics. Buckle up. This might get awkward.
Happy Sunday morning to you. How are you? Doing okay? Good. If you're brand new with us, and if you don't know who I am, my name is Lucas. I'm the lead pastor here. So grateful that you joined us. We know that this time of year, as school gets back in session, we have a lot of guests. So you may be just brand new at Bayview Glen Church, and we just are so glad that you're here. We want to extend a warm welcome to you. For those of you who have maybe been away over the summer on vacation or at cottages, you are not welcome back because we are all jealous of you. So, no, I'm kidding. We're grateful that you're back and good to see some faces I haven't seen in a little while. And then for those of us who have just been here all summer, each and every week, it's always great to see you. We are so thrilled that you joined us this morning in worship to make much of Jesus and to hear from his word. If you've never completed one of these Connect cards, I know Andy mentioned it already, but it's in the seat back in front of you, and we would love to just know that you were here. We would love for you to register your attendance with us. The way that you would do that is complete that card while I'm pontificating right now, and then at the end of the service, you can drop it in the offering plate when it comes by, especially guests here for the first time, or if you haven't filled one of these out before, or if it's been a while, update your information, let us know you've got a prayer request, whatever. Grab that Connect card, complete it, and then drop it in the offering plate as it comes by at the end of the message. There are some of you that may be here because you came to our first back-to-school bash last night. We had several hundred people on our campus. It was all kinds of fun. And I want to just tell you a quick story about my experience at the back-to-school bash to help us kind of get into this topic that we're talking about this morning. We had all kinds of stuff there last night. We had live music. It was awesome. We had inflatables and fun stuff for the kids. 3-on-3 basketball tournament, which was a lot of fun. And they had face painting. You know that deal where they paint kids' faces, right? And my kid decided it would be a great idea to get Batman painted on her face. That was cool. That was great. I loved it. And then one of our children's directors, our children's coordinators, her name is Cassandra, and I love her very, very much. Well, I loved her up until last night when she did this to me, but I don't love her anymore. All right, so here's what she did. What she did was after Kaya got her face painted, she said really loudly in front of Kaya and me, "Hey, Kaya, wouldn't it be great if Dad got his face painted too?" Right? So then my kid, I mean, that raises expectations, right? Now she's excited. Dad's going to get his face painted. And Cassandra is very, very smart. So she knew exactly what she was doing. You know, she looked at me like this. Ha 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 ha. So next thing you know, I'm sitting at the face painting station and I ended up looking like this. All right. That's Kaya last night with the Batman, and that's me with some kind of mean Hulk thing, okay? So it was a lot of fun, and we had a blast, and that would be a great story if it stopped there, but it did not. How many of you last night endured the line at the taco truck? Did you stay in line at the taco truck? Very long. We had food trucks out, very long line, and I was like, man, I got to get my kid fed because she's going to go home and go to bed, and she's got to have something in her stomach, so I just called Uber Eats. I mean, that's just what I did, and I should have stayed in line, and I get it, but I called Uber Eats to get it, and Sababa, right up the street here on the other side of Young. Greek restaurants, really good. You should go. So they delivered this food, and I'm waiting on like Anwar or whatever his name is driving a Mercedes, which It always confuses me how people who drive Uber drive Mercedes, but that's beside the point. But the point is, so he pulls in. I know my food's coming. I'm watching it on my app, and he pulls in, and he pulls in right up here to the front entrance, right here, the entrance that very few of us go in. And we were on the upper lot, right, up in the grass and all that stuff, and I see him pull in. So what I have to do is I have to start jogging towards Anwar and his Mercedes because my food is in there, and I need it, all right? I need it for me, I need it for Amy, and I need it for Kaya. So I'm jogging at his Mercedes. I jog around the back of the building over here, around the front, and I am jogging toward Anwar. And I'm like, I try to do fitness stuff, but like by the time I get around the corner, I'm actually breathing heavy from jogging, right? Because I'm jogging towards Anwar and his Mercedes and my food. So by the time I get around the corner, I'm breathing like this. And I come up behind Anwar's Mercedes with this face paint on, breathing like this. And I kid you not, this is exactly what happens. Anwar gets out of his car with my food. He turns around and he goes like this. Ha! I'm like, Anwar, cool out, man, cool out. You know what? Actually, I kind of was like, you know, scare him a little bit more. He handed me the food, got in the Mercedes, didn't wait for the tip, right? Get away as soon as he can, right? It was an awkward moment that I had with Anwar last night, and it was really, really fantastic. I love awkward moments. I don't know why. They're just fun for me. I actually put jokes into my sermon on purpose that aren't really that funny to anyone else but me because I like awkward moments. You'll see one this morning, and you won't laugh. And when that comes, I'll laugh inside, and you can just go like this. Okay, try it with me. Yeah, you can do that when it comes around. So I do that on purpose because I love awkward moments. I remember one time I was sitting in a movie theater with my wife, and I hate movies. I think they're stupid. I think they're a waste of time, right? But she loves them, so I'm sitting in the movie theater with her, and I lean over to her like 45 minutes into the movie. I'm like, I love you. She said, I love you. And about 10, 12 seconds later, she reaches her little hand across to me, and she has one of these in her hand. I said, well, you're a jerk. How about that? How about that? You want me to sit down the row? That's fine. I didn't ask to be here. I hate movies, right? My wife is a very, very gracious human being, extraordinarily kind. And so that awkward conversation would have been very, very difficult for her because she's so gracious. For me, awkward conversations are great. I just create awkward moments. But for her, she's really, really gracious. It was a difficult thing to do. You know, awkward conversations are necessary sometimes, but they're rarely easy, aren't they? They're rarely easy, but they're often necessary. I've got to have this awkward conversation with Anwar because it's necessary for me to get my food. My wife has to have this awkward conversation with me because it's necessary for me to have some gum in order for her to not pass out, later on in the movie as my breath gets more and more dragon-y, in her words, all right? They're rarely easy, but they're often necessary. You go into your boss, you ask for an increase in compensation, that can be an awkward conversation, but it's necessary in order to get an increase in compensation. You go to your spouse and say, my sexual needs aren't getting met. That's an awkward conversation, but it's necessary in order to build intimacy with that person. You go to your roommate and say, homeboy or homegirl, broseph, honey bunches, whatever you call your roommate, I don't know. Say, hey, you haven't showered in 3 days, and it's tough for me to sleep now because you smell pretty ripe. You need to shower. That's an awkward conversation. It's not easy, is it? It's not easy, but it's necessary so that you can sleep. Awkward conversations are rarely easy, but they're often necessary. What really makes an awkward conversation? There's a book that got released a few years ago called Critical Conversations. It's a New York Times bestseller, sold over 2 million copies. And the authors of the book suggest that there are three kind of things that come together that make awkward conversations uniquely awkward, that make critical conversations really critical. And it's this. First, that awkward conversations are usually high stakes. They're high stakes conversations. If you're talking about Fruit Loops versus cornflakes, that's not a really critical conversation. That's not a high stakes conversation. Unless, of course, you're Toucan Sam, okay? And you're on the front of Fruit Loops, then it's a high stakes conversation. Other than that, it's not a high stakes conversation. So when we're in a high stakes conversation where people have opposing opinions, if everybody agrees, it's not going to get awkward. But if we have opposing opinions, it's going to get awkward. And the last one is it's emotionally charged. When we have strong emotions, when these three things coalesce, high stakes conversations, opposing opinions, and strong emotions, the conversation is going to get as awkward as Michael Scott if you watch The Office at all. So for those of you who do watch The Office, you know that this is the most awkward person on the planet, hence the face right here. For those of you who don't watch The Office, that's not funny to you, but I don't care. That's what's going to happen when we have high-stakes conversations, strong emotions, and opposing opinions. Things are going to get awkward, and these critical conversations really are critical. You know, going to your boss and asking for a compensation increase, developing intimacy with your spouse, conversations with your roommate, conversations with your friends, they're critical conversations. They're absolutely necessary. They matter a great deal. And you know what's interesting? When it matters most, we're typically at our worst. You ever realize that? Like, we get into these conversations where typically we can just carry on conversations with people. We can talk and go back and forth and have a great time. But the minute it turns to something that's really critical and it matters, we get nervous, don't we? We panic. How many of you are conflict avoiders? Raise your hand if you're a conflict avoider, okay? How many of you run directly to conflict as fast as you possibly can? Good. How many of you are like me, and it's like, you know what? There's not a lot of conflict in my life right now. I don't have anything to do this, you know, Thursday night or whatever. I'm going to start a fight with my spouse. Are you that way? That's me. I'm bored. Netflix, I'll start a fight with Amy. It's great. You know, it's a way to kill a couple hours. And my wife is a crazy conflict avoider. She loves to run away from conflict. She doesn't like conflict. So if I even want alone time, then I start a fight because she just runs away. Then I get alone time. It's great. It's easy. It makes it easy for me. I'm a conflict starter. But no matter where you are in terms of that spectrum, when those conversations turn awkward, when they're really critical, when it matters most, we're typically at our worst. There's actually science to prove that. We'll talk about that here in a minute. So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to set up some ground rules. Because over the next few weeks, we're going to have some awkward conversations. We're going to address some difficult topics, and we need a framework that we all agree upon and say, you know what, that sounds good. That's how we're going to behave. That's our guidelines for behavior as we have these conversations. And I want you to know that the reason we're having these conversations is not because I chose these topics. It's not because our pastoral team or our elders, our staff chose these topics. It's because you, Bayview Glen Church, we together said these conversations may not be easy, but they're definitely necessary. Conversations about sexual identity, morality, mental health, science in the Bible, they're not easy, but they're absolutely necessary. What we did is we published a survey to all of our congregation. We had a bunch of options. What topics do you think the church should address? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And there was a thing on there that said other. You could write in whatever you want. And what we found is the overwhelming majority of folks said, these are the topics that we think need to be addressed in the church and by the church. And they are awkward, difficult, challenging conversations. So thank you so much for making me do it. I'm excited about that, all right? But we're going to set up some ground rules for behavior so that on the other side of this awkward conversation or this series of awkward conversations, we come out better for it. And the example that we're going to use, surprise, surprise, is the example of Jesus. Because Jesus has had some really difficult conversations. There were some if you read the Bible, there were so many awkward moments in the ministry of Jesus. He would say stuff and you could almost hear the crickets. I wish the gospel writers would have written that in. And then we heard crickets chirping, chirp, 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 you know. Or we heard the record, the vinyl record go, you know, and everybody just stops because it's like, did you just say that? Or like, you know, oh no, he didn't. I know they didn't say that back then, but something like that. And one of those awkward conversations is recorded in John chapter 4. Now, John started following Jesus when he was about 16 years old. He wrote this biography of the life of Jesus in his 80s. He was considered Jesus' best friend. They were super, super tight. And he talks about this conversation that Jesus has that was awkward in a couple of ways. One, Jesus had the conversation with a woman. And back then, in first century Palestine, men and women did not interact publicly for sure. And when they interacted privately, there were a lot of rules for that. So this got real awkward really quickly because Jesus, a man, was addressing a woman. Jesus was a Jew. If you didn't know that, Jesus was a Jew. This woman was from Samaria. And those two groups of people, Jews and Samaritans, did not associate with one another. And that's the understatement of the year, by the way, because they absolutely hated one another. They loathed one another. We really don't even have, in Western culture, an example to look at of two different ethnic groups that hated each other as much as Jews and Samaritans did. Some of your countries of origin, you can look at examples there. But in the Western world, we really don't have. I mean, they hated each other. So for a Jewish man to address a Samaritan woman was awkward to begin with. Now I want to fast forward to the most awkward part of this conversation. It's in John chapter 4. Jesus says to this woman, "Go call your husband and come here." The woman answered, "I have no husband." Chirp, 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 chirp. It gets worse. Jesus said to her, "You're right in saying I have no husband, for you've had five husbands, and the one you have now is not your husband. What you have said is true." Chirp, 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 chirp. Can you just hear the awkward silence here? Can you just hear this woman going? Awkward moment, right? Like, I don't know what to do, what to say. But by the end of this conversation, watch what happens. As awkward as it is, watch what happens at the end of this conversation. This woman shares with her friend. She says, "Come see a man who told me all I ever did. Can this be the Christ?" Let me ask you something. Every awkward conversation you have ever had with your boss, with your spouse, with a friend, with a roommate, what if in that conversation, they didn't just walk away doing what you asked them to do, saying what you asked them to say, believing or feeling what you asked them to believe or feel? What if they walked away thinking of you, "That person must be anointed of God"? It's not even about, "They've convinced me. I think they are literally sent by God in my life. I was an atheist before this, and I think that this is the anointed, chosen one in my life." Could you imagine if your boss said that about you? So this is what happens in John chapter 4. This woman gets to the point where she goes, "You are sent from God." I would say that Jesus was pretty successful in tying this awkward conversation up with a really nice ribbon on it, wouldn't you? He did a pretty nice job working from, "You've got five husbands, and the one you're with now isn't your husband," chirp, 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 to this place right here where she's like, "You're the Christ. He's good." So here's what we're going to do. We're going to learn from Jesus. Because there's some principles that happen in John chapter 4, some things that we can learn about having difficult conversations, which is what we've done as a church, chosen to have some challenging conversations about issues that really matter in our culture. And there's some principles that we can learn from Jesus, and those are going to be our ground rules for the next several weeks as we journey through This Might Get Awkward. So if you're taking notes, here's principle number one. Number one, we will initiate. We will initiate. We will initiate these conversations. We won't run away from them. We will initiate them. Most of us, when we face awkward conversations, we go into one of two modes. We go into fight mode or flight mode. Fight or flight mode. I've already asked you. Some of you are fight, some of you are flight. Scientifically speaking, here's what's happening. The blood leaves your brain when you get emotionally charged, high stakes conversation. The blood rushes out of your brain and it rushes to your arms, and you use your arms for throwing hands, right? For punching. The blood rushes to your legs. What do you use your legs for? Running away, right? That literally happens. That's a scientific thing, physiological thing that happens to your body when emotions get charged. And you either want to fight or flight. Run with your legs. The other thing that happens is there's these teeny tiny little glands on top of your kidneys that secrete a chemical called adrenaline. And we get jacked up, doped up, really, on adrenaline, and we say stuff that we regret, do we not? I mean, when it matters most, we're at our worst. But Jesus does not go into fight mode. He doesn't go into flight mode. He goes straight to this woman and addresses her and initiates a conversation. Watch what he does. He says that Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." A woman from Samaria came to draw water. Here she is at the well around noontime drawing water. And Jesus just walks up and initiates a conversation. He doesn't go to the heart of the issue right away. He doesn't go, you've had five husbands and you need to repent, right? He doesn't go into attack mode, flight mode. He doesn't go into flight mode where he just kind of walks by her and goes, I hope that she knows I'm the Christ, you know, like that's the, just avoid conflict. He says, hey, give me a drink. He just starts a conversation. He initiates a conversation. And as a church, we have decided that we will follow the example of Jesus and we will initiate. We will initiate even when it's high stakes, even when there's strong emotions involved, even when there are opposing opinions involved, even when it gets Michael Scott awkward, the stakes are too high to avoid conflict, we will, like Jesus did, initiate. We will initiate those awkward conversations because they matter. Number two, we will empathize. We will empathize. We will listen to opposing viewpoints. We will seek to understand to the best of our ability. We will put ourselves in someone else's shoes. We'll see the world from someone else's eyes. We will empathize. Jesus does the same thing. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God, who it is that is saying to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. Now, if you knew the gift of God, we can read that with two different tones of voice, can't we? We can read it with this tone of voice. Well, if you knew the gift of God, right? But that's not how Jesus talked. This is how Jesus talked. If you knew the gift of God, if you only knew the gift of God. See, he sees the world from her perspective. She doesn't know, and he wants to share it. His heart goes out to her. He shows compassion. There's a word in the Greek. It's compassion that comes from down here. It's an emotion that Jesus felt on a regular basis. He empathizes. He listens. He understands. And we will empathize too. We're going to talk here in a few weeks about what God has to say about human sexuality. We're going to talk specifically about the LGBTQ community. I am not a part of the LGBTQ community. I would assume that many of you are not as well. But you know what? You've got a lot more in common with that community than you think. And we as a church will work hard to see the world from their eyes. You know why? Because Jesus did. And if we're Christians, that word just means little Christ, we follow in his footsteps. I have struggled with mental health in my own personal life. When we talk about mental health, I'll share a little bit of my own personal story. Many of you have not struggled with mental health. And I know it's difficult to understand. I know it's difficult to empathize. I know it's difficult to see the world from the eyes of someone who's struggling with bipolar, manic depression, clinical depression, any number of things. But we will work hard to see the world from those folks' eyes, from my eyes in a lot of ways. You know why? Because Jesus did. He put himself in her shoes, saw the world from her eyes, empathized, and said, if you just knew the gift of God, we will empathize. Number three, we'll be truthful. We'll be truthful. In these awkward conversations, I know it's difficult sometimes to speak the truth. Emily Dickinson once said, tell all the truth, but tell it slant. We're not going to tell it slant. We're not going to sugarcoat it. We will tell the truth. Why? Because Jesus told the truth. Look what happens. He says, go call your husband and come here. The woman answered him, I have no husband. Jesus says, you're right in saying you have no husband, for you've had five, and the one you have now is not your husband. What you have said is, say this word with me, true. True. It's true. We will be truthful because Jesus was truthful. Now, this puts Christians in a little bit of a predicament, culturally speaking. Because a lot of times when we're truthful in the culture and we're truthful with our friends, when we take on that prophetic voice, which is our duty, our obligation as Christians, and we speak truth into the culture, a lot of times the culture isn't excited about hearing it, right? The other thing is that we've kind of painted ourselves into a corner as Christians, to be totally honest with you. Part of it is our fault because we're really excited about speaking the truth, but a lot of times we fail to do what? Live the truth. Right? Like if you ask just some random person on the street, if you asked your friends, give me one word that describes Christians, just one word. One word that describes the Christian community, one word that describes the way you interact with Christians, perceive Christians. That one word a lot of times is going to be hypocrite, isn't it? not loving, not gracious. You know what? They act a lot like Jesus did. A lot of them, it's hypocrites because we speak the truth, but we fail to live the truth. In fact, a guy named Warren Wiersbe, he's a devotional author in Christianity. He wrote this. He said, truth without love is brutality, and love without truth is hypocrisy. He says it actually works the other way around as well. When we speak the truth but don't live it, that's hypocrisy. But when we fail to speak the truth and we only love, that's just sentimentality. That's actually hypocrisy. I love that. Truth without love is brutality. How many of you have a spouse like that? Like, speak the truth and don't do it. Don't nudge them right now. Like, I'm not sitting by Amy because she would be nudging me. Like, you speak brutal truth sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I do. Shush. No, not really. Not really. The truth without love is brutality, but love without truth is hypocrisy. But we have committed as a church to be truthful because Jesus was truthful, even when the truth is challenging for people to hear. There was a great philosopher that once said this. Now, I know that some people shy away from what I say. They think it's too blunt. But when you don't give people that, they feel like you're being fake and you're not telling the truth. So it's like you want me to tell the truth, but when I do, it's too much for you. That great philosopher, of course, was Missy Misdemeanor Elliott. But that's beside the point. The point is that Missy has a point here because you want us to tell the truth, but when we do, we say, well, that's not the truth. So we've got to figure out a way to speak the truth in a way that our culture hears it. Speak the truth in a way that our friends can understand it. Speak the truth in a way that we can continue to engage, even in awkward conversations and difficult conversations. And once again, we have a great example in Jesus. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen His glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of what? Say that word. Grace and truth. So when we're truthful, we've got to be gracious as well. We've got to speak the truth saturated with love. We've got to speak the truth dripping with grace. We will be truthful and gracious. We will empathize, we'll understand, we'll listen, and we'll speak the truth dripping with grace. I think we're on number five. We'll find common ground. We'll find common ground. Like I said before, you may look at other communities and other individuals and other people and think you don't have anything in common with them, but rest assured, you do. Because a Jewish man and a Samaritan woman in first century Palestine would have had absolutely zero in common, according to the world. People would have looked at them and said, there is nothing they can talk about, nothing that they have in common, no values, no similar thought process, nothing, nothing. But watch what Jesus does. This is absolutely brilliant. He addresses this woman about her husband's situation, and then watch, this is what she does. She says, the woman said to him, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Okay, you never met this man. He knows you've been married 5 times, and he knows that the guy you're living with is not your husband, and you perceive that he is a prophet. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Very good observation. Very, very wonderful. See, she says, our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place we ought to worship. And Jesus doesn't say to her, look, you're trying to redirect. You're bringing up worship. You're bringing up Jerusalem and this mountain and that mountain because you don't want to talk about this. You're trying to avoid. You don't want to address this issue that I've brought to your attention. And so we're going to come back to it, all right? You're going to focus on what I just said. No. Jesus doesn't say that. He says, you know what? Look, we do have some common ground there. We are both worshipers of God. And we both seek Him. And want to know Him. You want to have a conversation about worship? Let's have a conversation about worship, Jesus says to her. Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem you worship the Father. You worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know. Jesus continues. He says, for salvation is from the Jews, meaning Himself. He was a Jew and He brings salvation. What Jesus is doing here is He's finding common ground, and that common ground is worship. Both of these individuals seek to worship God. Both of them want to know God. And so because Jesus found common ground, we will find common ground. We will fight tooth and nail to understand that people are made in the image of God, each and every person. That's one thing you've got in common. People are loved by God in an extraordinary and unfathomable way. That's another thing you've got in common. As different as you think you might be from somebody, there's always something you have in common. Jesus fought to find common ground, so we will too. then we'll be patient. We'll be patient. Jesus was so patient in this conversation. Remember at the outset here, we declared what Jesus' intention here in this conversation is to reveal his own identity. What he wants this woman to know is that he is the Christ, and that's where she ends up getting. She says, you are the Christ. Yeah, the Son of God. Yep, I believe that. Yep, that's where he wanted to go. But instead of walking up to this woman, she's drawing water from the well, and Jesus going, I'm the Christ. Like, and let me tell you all the things I know about you, right? Let me tell you all the things I know about you to prove that I'm the Christ. What's he do? He says, can I have a drink of water? And then they start talking about her relationships, and then they start talking about worship, and they start talking about all sorts of different stuff. And then Jesus finally responds to this woman's statement. Here's the statement. She says, I know that Messiah is coming. He who is called Christ, when he comes, he will tell us all things. She says, I know about this Messiah, this anointed one, this Christ that people are waiting for and looking for. I know about that. And Jesus says, I who speak to you am he. He reveals his own identity. He says, I'm the Christ, the Son of God. Now watch this. I typically don't put verse numbers up on the screen for two reasons. One is because they weren't in the original language, weren't in the original Greek. And that's fine. If you want them in there, that's okay with me. The other reason I don't put them up there is because I feel like it kind of reads a little smoother, you know, when we don't have the verse markings in there. I do put the address up there, but I don't typically put the verse markings. But I put this one here because I want you to know it took Jesus 26 verses to get to where he wanted to go from verse 1. And in Bible time, that's like 1,000 years, right? Like stuff happens, like people die and kingdoms fall in like a half a verse. Like what just happened there, right? When God created the stars in Genesis chapter 1, you know, that's one word in the Hebrew. One word. It literally is one word. All the stars, one word. And it took Jesus 26 verses to get here. Why? He's just so patient. He's just so patient. So we will be patient as well. And there are two types of patience, aren't there? Like there's patience in the midst of the conversation. There's the short-term patience. How many of you would say, you know, I'm an impatient person in the short term. I let anger get the best of me sometimes. I lack patience. Yeah, I'm kind of that guy. A guy named Ambrose Bierce once says this. He said, speak when you're angry and you'll make the best speech you will ever regret. I love that. I love that because sometimes we get angry and we're like, that's the best thing I've ever said. And we walk away and we're like, well, I'm not married anymore. So that's good news, all right? So speak when you're angry, and you'll make the best speech you will ever regret. But Jesus doesn't do this. In fact, he responds to what the Bible prescribes in Proverbs, and the Bible says this, fools give full vent to their rage, but the wise bring calm in the end. Jesus says, I can just be calm. I can just be patient. I don't have to yell at this woman. I don't have to demand from this woman. We just walk through this conversation, and when the time is right, I'll tell her the truth about who I am. He's so extraordinarily patient. So that's short-term patience. And we're going to exercise that in this series as a church, not just in this room, but as the conversation continues outside of this room. But we're also going to exercise what I call long-term patience. Because many of us as Christians, for those in the room who are not Christians, I'm not going to talk to you just for a minute, but I'm going to talk to Christians. A lot of times we have this thing inside of us that says, I need to convince my friend that they need to convert to Christianity, right? That's what I need to do. I need to convince them that, you know, if they're an atheist, that there is a God. If they're far from God, to draw near to him. If they believe that there's a God, that Jesus is his son. I need to convince them, and I need to do that immediately. But that's not the biblical example that we have, specifically in St. Paul. St. Paul was the greatest missionary that the world has ever known. He planted the earliest churches. He wrote, like, two-thirds of the New Testament. He was an extraordinary man. And towards the end of his life, he was before a couple of governors in the Roman Empire, one called King Agrippa and the other called Festus. If you're pregnant, by the way, with the boy Agrippa or Festus, great options. Great options for naming your child a biblical name. Agrippa, Festus. Think about it, okay? So Paul is before these two individuals, and what he does is he shares his story of faith, and he says, this is what happened. I was running this way, and I met Jesus, and he changed my life. And Agrippa knows full well what Paul's doing. Paul is trying to convert him. And Paul makes no bones about it. He's like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And Agrippa says this, watch. Paul looks at Agrippa, and he says, King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you believe. Like, that's pretty bold, don't you think? Like, he's on trial for his life here. And he's like, oh, come on now. Don't blow smoke up my kilt. I know. Like, I know you believe. Tell me you believe. And Agrippa says to Paul, in a short time, would you persuade me to be a Christian? In a short time. Watch Paul's answer. Love this. Paul says, whether short or long, I would to God that not only you, but also all who hear this day might become such as I am. Doesn't matter how long it takes. I'll be what? Patient. Today, 30 years from now, I'm here. We're in relationship, short or long. Then he adds this little dig, which I think is great. Except for these chains. These, we can do without those. In fact, can you get them off of me, right? Everybody would be that I am, except for these chains. But whether short or long, I'm in it with you. I'm in the long haul. I will be patient. So over the course of this series, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about biblical truth. We're going to talk about biblical principles. We're going to talk directly to the LGBTQ community. We're going to talk directly with those struggling with mental health. Next week, we're going to talk about science and the Bible. And in all of those situations, we're going to be patient in the short term and patient in the long term as well. Finally, we'll be kind. We'll be kind. This shows up all through John chapter 4. I could show you 1,000 places. I could show you 1,000 places in the life of Jesus, but I don't need to because you know Jesus. Even if you're in church for the first time, what you've heard of Jesus is that he was kind and gentle, slow to anger, abounding in love, and that's true. He was extraordinarily kind. We will be kind as we have difficult and awkward conversations. So just a preview of where we're going over the next couple weeks. We've had a bunch of emails, a bunch of people asking about this. But next week, we're going to talk about science and the Bible. We could talk about a number of things. We could talk about Jonah and the big fish. We could talk about Noah's Ark. We could talk about a lot of different things. But we're going to do the big one next week. And it's Genesis 1 through 3, the creation account. So next week, we're going to kind of use that as a case study and take some examples from that case study that could apply to other Bible passages where science and the Bible correlate. What we're going to do is we're going to take a look at a couple of different interpretations of the creation account, all of which fall within the realm of Christian orthodoxy. And if you've never heard a pastor say, I don't know from the platform, be here next week, because I will say multiple times, I don't know. How long did it take God to create the world? I don't know. And we've narrowed it down, right? Somewhere between 6 days and 6 trillion years. Right in that range is what it took him, all right? But we're going to use that creation account, study that as a case study, and learn some things that we can apply to other texts where science and the Bible correlate. The following week, we're going to talk about money and power. We've got a guest speaker in that week. His name is Jared Ayers. He's from Liberty Church in Philadelphia, a multi-ethnic church there in the city in Philadelphia. Andy Cherry, who's our worship leader, would say that the reason he's still in ministry today is because of Jared. I've heard Jared speak a number of times. He's absolutely brilliant and perfect for Bayview Glen and our culture, and he's going to talk about money and power. And if you know anything about what Jesus said about money and power, you know that that might get awkward. September 30th, we're going to talk about the afterlife. Where do you go when you die? What happens when you die? Does one thing happen? Does multiple things happen? How's that work? We're going to talk about the afterlife. October 7, we're going to talk about mental health. I will start that sermon with my own journey with mental health and share with you what has transpired in my life and how I learned about mental health and mental illness and how that's been treated in my own life. And we're going to talk about what God has to say about that, and all through this series, applying all those ground rules, those principles that we just learned. On October 14th, we're going to talk about morality. Where does morality come from? Are right and wrong stagnant categories, or do they morph over time? Is it black and white, or is there some gray, and what does God have to say about that? So we're going to talk about morality. And then to wrap the series up, because we have a parking problem right now, we're just going to talk about sexual identity. And so the next week, we won't have a parking problem anymore, apparently, because sexual identity is really hard. There'll be like 100 people there the following week. But listen, with the sexual identity sermon, we're going to talk directly to the LGBTQ community. And I want you to know, if you have friends or family or colleagues or associates or whatever that are a part of that community, I would beg of you your trust. Bring them that Sunday. That message will be extraordinarily gracious. Yes, We will briefly affirm the biblical definition of marriage, one man, one woman for life. But for the rest of the time, I am, on behalf of Christians, going to say that we have failed the LGBTQ community by not being their friends, by not defending them when they've been abused, by not welcoming them into our homes, by not being kind to them and gracious to them, by not affirming the image of God in them. I want them to know that they are loved by God and extraordinarily valuable in His eyes. And even on that Sunday, we'll have a personal kind of story of someone who has walked through this in their own life. We're going to watch it on video. Someone from our congregation, very close to them, who is part of the homosexual community, the LGBTQ community, and how this person has retained his convictions, but also continue to love this person very well, who is near and dear to him. It's going to be a great, great Sunday, and I would ask you to bring your friends that are part of that community. We're going to end with this. Here we go. Awkward moments, awkward conversations are better together. You know that? It's better to go through awkward stuff when you're with other people, isn't it? Like when you're by yourself and something awkward happens, you don't look around like, can we laugh at this? There's nobody to laugh with. I told you this before, but one time when I was a kid, I tried to play guitar with my teeth. You know, because I saw Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock do that, play guitar with his teeth, right? What I didn't think through was that I had braces at the time. So I definitely got the guitar stuck to my face, and my father walked into my bedroom while I had this guitar stuck to my face, just panicked, you know? Like, I didn't know what I was going to do. I have a guitar stuck to my face, strings to braces, the whole deal. My dad, this is exactly what happened. This is no word of a lie. He walks into my room like this. He steps in, he looks at me, and he goes, I was like, disappointed, not mad, right? Actually, I was like, disappointed, not mad, right? And, you know, those awkward moments like that are a lot more fun when you got people around, right? They're better together. But listen, I want to tell you this too. Awkward moments make us together better. Here's what I mean by that. I see couples all the time and hear couples all the time. They've been dating or engaged for a couple, 3 months, and they haven't gone through anything difficult together. They haven't been sick together. They haven't had any fights. They haven't had to tell the other person, have a piece of gum, right? They haven't had that conversation about your parents are driving me bonkers. They haven't had anything awkward go on. And it's really tough for them because all of life is bliss and it's fun and it's happy. But the couples who have gone through seasons together, gone through awkward, difficult, challenging things together, those couples tend to stay together longer. And in fact, counselors, marriage counselors, and psychologists would affirm the same. When you've gone through difficult, challenging, awkward things together, and when you've had those awkward conversations, it draws people together in unity. So here's what we're going to do. Over the next several weeks, we're going to have some tough conversations, and it's going to be a lot more fun having those conversations because we're all in the room together with our hands in the middle. And what we're going to do is watch God do something extraordinary, because as we have these conversations, He's going to draw us closer and closer together as a family. It's going to be great. So if you're a Christian and you think everything is black and white and there's no gray and you've got all the answers, buckle up, because this series might get awkward. For those of you who are far from God, or you just checking out church and sometimes hearing the truth about the Bible and truth about what God says, and that it doesn't really bend over time and change with culture, if that's tough for you to hear, buckle up. This might get awkward. For all of us, I will be an equal opportunity offender for the course of the series, as will God. But it's going to be better together, and it's going to make us together better as we apply these principles that we learn from Jesus, having tough, tough conversations over the next few weeks. Let's pray together. God, thank you for the example that Jesus was and is, not just in giving his own life for our sake, not just in going to the cross and paying the penalty that we owed you, not just in reconciling us to you, not just in setting aside his glory and being a servant to all, not just in those things, but even in the little things, even in the daily life application things, in managing difficult conversations. Thank you for the example that he was in being both truthful and gracious. Thank you for the example that he was in being kind to all, in finding common ground, in valuing the individual, in being extraordinarily patient in both short and long term, in initiating awkward conversations that needed to be had rather than running away from them. God, help us to be a community of Christ followers who model or use Jesus as a model and walk in his footsteps, even as we have challenging conversations. Thanks, God, for your presence here by your Holy Spirit. In the name of Christ, God's people said, amen. Hey, let's stand together as we respond in song.